Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Java Posse. This is the newscast for Thursday, the 12th of January. I'm Tor Norby from Sun Microsystems.
I'm Dick Wall from New Energy.
I'm Carl Quinn from Google.
And I'm Joe Nuxall from Apple.
Who?
What?
Hey! Hey guys, how you doing? My name's Joe Nuxall. I've actually known Dick and Carl and Tor for a pretty darn long time, and we've talked a lot about having me jump on the posse and see what kind of stuff I can throw in.
Yep.
So we're going to try it, see what happens.
Yeah.
So this is sort of a unique podcast for us. We're sitting in Carl's house late on a Thursday night.
All of us.
Drinking wine.
all four of us.
All
in
four
one room.
Of us in the same room.
Not all drinking that. Wine, though.
I'm drinking wine.
I got scotch.
Yeah, scotch. Yeah.
So all of our recordings until now have been done via the internet on, you know, well, different continents even, with Dick in Atlanta and Carl and I in California.
That's the same continent, Tor.
Coast, sorry. Coast.
It's a different continental divide, I believe.
Yes.
Dope.
So today we're actually here all in person, so.
Yeah, I was
so
lucky enough to
talk more about the fact that Joe's here.
Sure, that works for me. I give the world a little background here. I've worked with Carl for, I don't know, eight or 9 years, and I worked with Tor for about 2 to 2.5 years while I was at Sun. And both Carl and Tor and I worked together at Sun, and Carl and I worked together at Borland for many years before that. And Dick Wall was also one of our major customers when we were at Sun, so we met him all together. And when this first came up, the whole idea of doing the Java Posse, it was talked about that I'd be on there, but that was just too many people from Sun. And I've moved off to Apple now, so I'm eligible to be a Posse member once again. So I got my trench coat on and my six shooter. I'm ready to talk shop.
And I'm kind of happy because, you know, Joe is one of the few people I know that I can actually talk about Laguna Seca and auto racing and large engines packed into small lightweight things. That's kind of fun to have somebody around to talk to about that stuff. So.
Yeah, if you guys do another Christmas style, or if we do another Christmas style episode where we're not just talking about Java, you'll have to hit me with a stick if I get into racing because I can go without stopping.
I'll match you.
Yeah.
I'll try.
All right. Carl and Tor, you guys have to be on stick duty if we do that.
I just realized you're not muted, right? Usually we have Skype to check.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Okay. I can see my bar graph.
Right. So should we head into the news or should we talk more about...
Maybe I'll just give a little bit of background as to why I'm here. I'm actually invited out here for a developer advisory council, which is... kind of a posh way of saying that I get to bitch and whine and ask for stuff, and people actually seem to be grateful about that. And it also meant I got a trip out to California to catch up with everybody, and a meeting with Sun the day before to see a whole bunch of new technology, some of which I can talk about and some of which I can't. So,
excellent.
All right.
We're lucky to have Dick out here. We don't get to see him very often, usually just at Java 1.
Yeah, I live in the boondoggle Atlanta end of things, so it's fun to visit out here, definitely. All right, so let's see. I've got a couple of news items here. The first one, of course, is that this week the big Macworld, several big announcements from Macworld, but one of the big ones is the first of the Intel-based Mac computers is out.
Woo-hoo.
And there's a technical Q&A on, do I need to change my Java application to run on Intel-based Macintosh? I think this actually feeds into a much larger question of, what is the story of Java on the new Intel Macs right now? Does anybody know whether they're fully supporting 1.4.2, 1.5, or what the deal is there?
So, again, I have to make it really clear that I cannot speak as a representative of Apple. I do work there. I actually work in the online store. But I'm not privy to any stuff that the outside public knows. So luckily I can't tell you anything that, because I don't know anyway. But that's actually public info. The Java VM that they are currently running on the PCs is supporting 1.5. It's the same 10.4.4 version or OS version 10.4.4. It runs exactly the same, perfectly well, and there's nothing you have to do to your Java apps at all.
That's a really good thing, because a lot of people are, you know, you got the Rosetta stuff to run PowerPC code in the Intel side, right. And a lot of people are recompiling their stuff, but of course with Java, you just bring it in and it works. So good time to be writing Java apps right now if you're a Mac user, I think.
Yeah. All that, the Rosetta stuff is essentially for the Cocoa applications that are, you know, specifically to the Mac platform. But Java bytecode already runs on the VM, and the VM is already running on both versions, so you have nothing to worry about.
Cool.
And now it runs really fast, yes, which is, I guess, the big deal about the new processes.
Yeah, five times faster, I believe they're saying.
And it's a dual core, the new machine, right?
A dual core, yeah. Core. Intel dual, it's Core Duo is the name of the technology.
Now, have you tried one of the new machines?
I have, and ironically, actually, I tried the new machine while I was at Sun. They had the developer preview boxes that was also public stuff that you could pay some amount of money to Apple at the time to move your things to Universal Binary. Sun got a bunch of them. I was playing with one of them for a while.
No, but that box wasn't five times faster, right?
That's true. That wasn't a Core Duo. Excuse me. So your question is, have I used a Core Duo? And the answer again is yes. I went on Tuesday to Macworld and played with both the iMac version of the Core Duo and the laptop version. And, you know, again, this is a queue of hundreds of people waiting in line to touch it. So I really just played a little bit with iWeb and dinked around, and it seemed quick, but I didn't really get to do anything that stressed it.
It'll be fun to see how, you know, the large Java applications, the IDEs, perform on this thing.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I've had a Mac Mini for a while now, and I've been, you know, ramping up on it. I love the Mac Mini for a start. I love the OS X. And so I've been really kind of flirting with the PowerBook, and I've been holding off because I suspected that this was coming. And so now this is just the perfect time to start thinking about that. And they're called MacBooks now, so I've got to get out
MacBook
calling them
Pro.
iBook Pro. Or PowerBook. It's a MacBook. Yeah. But yeah, this is something I'd love to get right now. And given the rather poor quality of the audio recording equipment on my Dell, that's just another good reason to get one, so...
Well, we got that too. I mean, in the same keynote, they announced the GarageBand, the new version of GarageBand in iLife 06 that actually has a podcast recording studio built into it. So I'm using it right now on my older style G4 laptop, and it seems to work, but we'll see if this mixes.
So
well, we'll know.
That will come with the new machines then, iLife.
iLife comes with the new machines, yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, cool.
Java. There, you have to say that a couple times interspersed with all these other things.
Well, usually we have this long list of news items prepared by Dick. But, of course, this week, given that he's traveling, we're sort of winging it.
Yeah.
Well, winging on.
We can talk about the developer.com products of the year, which were made. Also, which was it? eWeek also made a bunch of the product of the year awards this
Well,
past
eWeek Labs went through and looked at their reviews for the past year and sort of picked the big winners in each category.
Okay.
And of course, you know, I take particular pride because Creator was actually picked as the developer tool of the year from eWeek Labs, which was really
excellent.
Cool.
Excellent.
The Creator 2, by the way.
Fantastic.
So that was
Fantastic.
Very nice. And that was followed up by a win of Best Java Developer Tool of the Year in developer.com. So it was sort of a really good week for us in the Creator group.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, but we should talk about all the Java winners in the developer.com. That's probably going to be of interest to our listeners.
Okay, so the first one, technology of the year, is Ajax from Mozilla Developer Center. Actually, I didn't know Ajax had a home.
I didn't either.
So that's kind of
surprising
for me. But apparently, Ajax is now owned by the Mozilla Developer Center. So that's an interesting one.
Maybe they copyrighted the word.
And then there's the framework of the year, Java Server Faces. So that kind of fits in nicely with Creator and the whole approach there. Although, of course, Creator isn't the only tool that does it. JDeveloper has a good Java Server Faces approach right now. And, of course, you can always use VI if that's your
thing. I think there's some plugins for Eclipse, too. But, of course, my biased opinion is going to be that you're Creator.
Is there a good plugin for JSF and Eclipse?
I don't think it's free. I think there's something called Exadel Studio, which I think is okay. To JSF.
Yeah, because I happened to be hunting the other day to try to find what sort of things I could do a quick project with, and I couldn't. And I knew about Creator, of course, but I wasn't able to find anything else good.
So the development tool of the year, it's interesting that they distinguish between the development tool of the year and the Java tool of the year.
Well, developer tool of the year includes all kinds of stuff, like Visual Studio.
Right.
And of course, Eclipse is in that category because it is not just a Java IDE. It does all kinds of things.
Right, and that's actually the winner. And you use Eclipse quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm using an IDE, that's pretty much what I use.
Cool. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that Eclipse won that because Eclipse is starting to be positioned as more than just a Java development environment. They've got plugins for other languages. They've had C and C++ for a while. And I think there's a Ruby environment in there now and some other ones. So
Python support's pretty
yep.
good.
Yep.
When you download the web, the dynamic web application kit, is it called the WebTK or something like that, or WTK? That may not be the name of it, but what does that include? Because it's not a Java thing. It seemed to include a bunch of scripting language stuff. Does anybody know?
The WTK, is that what you're talking about?
You can download from the eclipse.org, there's a dynamic web toolkit, and it doesn't look like a Java thing. It looks like it's just scripting languages.
Yeah, I think that's I think it's support for scripting languages. My impression is that it's being developed, that it's not really fully baked. But I could be wrong. I'm definitely not well informed about it.
I probably could have RTFM'd and had the answer for you, but...
Okay, so the next one up was Development Utility of the Year. There was a bunch of them in the running for this. Ant was the winner, which, you know, and I say good to that one. Ant is, it wouldn't have been one that I would have even, occurred to me to nominate, because, and I think that's actually a sign of its success rather than its failure.
Seems like de facto.
It's so ubiquitous that you don't even think about it anymore. It's just something that you go in and use there. And so it's kind of nice. Ant from the Apache Software Foundation, of course. You know, it's terrific. It's very, very useful and completely ubiquitous. I'm really glad that one.
Seems like all the Java IDEs have kind of moved to an Ant build project structure. They don't even really use their own project files. They just use build XML to do projects.
Is that true? I was under the impression that Eclipse supports Ant, but it's not using it natively.
Oh, it's not. My bad. No. I know NetBeans does. You basically just use that as a project file.
NetBeans does.
NetBeans and Creator.
Eclipse.
But I think it can emit an Ant script that will be exactly the same as what it does. Yeah.
Yeah. JDeveloper does the same thing. It gets close, but there's a few things missing from what it spits out from what it actually uses to build. So the web service product of the year, the Google APIs from Google Inc.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
They are very nice.
The wireless mobile development tool or add-in of the year, that's quite a mouthful. J2ME Wireless Toolkit from Sun Microsystems with the runner-up of Sybase Pocket Builder. I haven't seen Sybase. You guys check that out at all?
I haven't played that at all.
Okay. And I don't know much about the only... mobile development toolkit I know of is the Mobility Pack. I guess this is distinct from that. So,
yeah, the wireless toolkit I think is used by the NetBeans Mobility Pack. I think this is sort of the basic building block that has a lot of I think machine specific code to actually talk to the devices.
Okay. The database tool or add-in of the year, MySQL 5.0 from MySQL. Pretty cool. You guys use MySQL at all?
Yes, definitely have. It's almost scary that an open source database seems to be sweeping the nation.
Yeah.
It seems like such a absolutely business critical thing that your database is the lifeblood of everything behind the scenes. And that's now becoming ubiquitous open source kind of thing. That's sort of a statement for open source.
You know the thing.
But is MySQL winning? I've heard good things about, Postgres and some other things too. I don't really know.
I mean, having a very simple relational database that you can get your hands into if you need to tweak it and make it go fast.
Yeah.
There's a big win to that. And you can build your own layers, persistence layers on top of it pretty easily.
Yeah.
To do distributed work with it if you don't need a lot of the fancy features.
I just wish it wasn't implemented in native code. It's a hassle to configure.
Yeah.
I'm sure it runs great, but it doesn't really seem necessary at this point for an application like that to require all kinds of...
Well, the whole point of a database is concurrency under massive load, and...
Which Java would do really well at.
That's a tough one. I mean, it's so much file I.O. It's hard.
If it's properly written with java.nio, you should be able to do a really, really great job, especially if the people in the expert group, like Carl over there,
are you working on file.io now?
Yeah, oh, excellent. I'm in the new IO 203.
The new? That's awesome.
New. Well, that's what I call it. Yeah.
Mark 2.
Revisited.
I mean, the main area I want to contribute is the file system APIs.
Are there anyone on that expert group from any kind of database vendor or open source project, or is it
you
mostly all
so.
Web server people?
No, I forget the names of everybody on the conference calls. I think we have Oracle people, at least one.
Is that a Josh Block? Is he involved in
Josh
that?
Josh is not on it, no, but Doug Lee is on it. Yeah. So he knows this stuff really well.
We'll get the concurrency part right.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about MySQL is it may be a native tool, but compared with the installation of MySQL compared with the installation of something like Oracle, night and day difference. I'd choose MySQL any day.
Yes.
It's a whole lot easier to install. So then we get to the Java tool or add-in of the year, which of course was Sun Java Studio Creator. Yes. That's the second year in a row that this one. This is the version 2.
Right?
Yeah, version 2 has won this year. Version 1 won it last year. JSR, you say only a geek, only a pretty geeky community could come up with a JSR of the year, I'm thinking. that's pretty well up there. But JSR of the year was 244, which is Java EE 5.0.
Now, if we were really geeky, we would just have to say the number 244.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
we just have 244.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember 244. That was a good
Fantastic.
Year.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a good vintage.
No, that actually, of course, is a critical JSR, the usability improvement of J2EE.
It almost seems unfair, though, that when for an award like this, any time the J2EE or J2SE group comes up with their next major JSR for the next version of Java or next version of EE, it's going to win. I mean, it's going to be the most important thing that happens in the industry.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well,
it's their year.
And they would have to refine the award categories. If you want to have most innovative, I mean, because I think this is interpreted as which one is most important. And clearly, it probably would be the big cluster ones, as opposed to, most innovative or fastest JSR. I think we know what the slowest
the one
ones
with
are.
The most
We're not
going to
mention new names. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I really like about the Java EE 5.0 spec, and something that I think from a few things that I've read in the last few weeks that isn't necessarily understood, is that some pretty big luminaries have been behind it, including, and the one that sticks out in my mind is Gavin King, who was big behind the Hibernate stuff. He's Mr. Hibernate. And he really fed into the, particularly the EJB 3.0 spec, the persistence spec for it. He's really into this now.
So we were talking about the JSR. Was that where we sort of ended? Were there any more awards?
Oh, let me see.
We're just saying that the Sun JSR. I mean, I'm thinking that's sort of true in a lot of categories. Like, look at the, well, actually, I don't want to say this, so never mind.
Come on, Tor. Spit it out.
Tor's drunk.
No secrets tonight. Okay, so the .NET tool or add-in of the year, that was Microsoft Visual Studio 2005. Are there actually any other .NET tools or add-ins out there?
Whatever happened to Delphi?
Yes.
I thought that's the category. I read this. The one category they said they listed the runner-up because it was such a shoe-in that Microsoft would win. I think Mono is listed, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mono is listed as the...
Specifically because they had...
Add-on. .NET add-on of the year, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not an add-on to Studio. It's just sort of a...
as add-ons? Because if components are counted as add-ons, then they win. There's more .NET components than any other kind of component.
No, but you're saying that this particular add-on wins. I mean, you have to say this component then is the add-in of the year.
Ah.
Right? So either a plugin or a full tool, can win.
Gotcha, yeah.
Or
if
a component,
there's any
I guess.
Standout particular component.
Okay.
Good times.
Good times. This is the Dignation cast right here. We've all got alcohol. We're all...
we're having fun.
What are you drinking tonight, Carl? Is that single malt or double malt?
That's a 15-year-old single malt.
Oh, very nice.
Nice.
So the next one, security tool or add-in of the year. This one's a surprise to me, actually, because, I know of it, but not a great deal, and it's not a hyped one. Sun Java System Identity Manager. You guys use that at all?
Is that the Liberty server, the one that does...
the single sign-on thing.
Yeah, I mean,
I assume.
That's a big deal, I guess.
Well, there was a lot... while I was at Sun, I definitely heard a lot about it when we went and talked to customers and things. There was always somebody talking about the single sign-on stuff as a big feature that people wanted.
Yeah, this is the big answer to Passport, right? Or Hailstorm.
Yeah.
So and I think Sun and Microsoft have gotten together to standardize that, so Passport and Liberty... interoperate to some degree now.
Yeah.
That's right. That was part of the whole
I love you, man. Here's $2 billion.
Exactly. The big truce between Sun and Microsoft in areas like this kind of technology, where it makes a lot of sense for the two to connect, you know, Java and the whole .NET platform.
Oh, that's cool. And the final one, open source tool of the year, which was a tie between OpenOffice 2.0 and Firefox. I'd have a tough time picking between those as well.
Wow.
I think.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't have too much of a tough time.
That's, for me, that's a Firefox shoe-in. In terms of adoption, everybody uses Firefox.
Yeah, this isn't an adoption competition. It's about, you know, what's...
Okay, so it's not a popularity contest. Right. Okay.
Yeah, here's the thing. As a Linux user, OpenOffice gets the nod from me because it gets me away from needing Windows around to open up documents. So...
Right, and if you've been using Linux, you probably have had Mozilla for a long time. So Firefox is just a polished Mozilla.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great.
I think for the masses, at this point, the most of the public, they see Firefox now as a huge, big alternative to, you know, to IE. Right. And maybe they're not yet ready for OpenOffice. But so probably for the mass public, Firefox is the most visible thing.
Right. But again, it's not a... Apparently, it's not a popularity contest, which probably makes sense for a technology award. So that totally makes sense. OpenOffice is...
Yeah, or we'd have to give the award to IE every year. That's
exactly.
Kind of important.
It's a higher piece of technology. I'd have to agree with that. And I hope it gets better and better and better.
Yeah. Well, the new base is pretty nice. That was definitely a missing component. Of course, one of the components that's still missing from it that Office has is some kind of an Outlook. Some kind of a calendaring or scheduling solution.
Well, to bring it back to Java, I know at least one of the big things in OpenOffice 2 is that they have an integrated database and it's implemented in Java.
Right.
Did they start with an existing one or did they start from scratch and create a new one?
I have absolutely no idea.
I think it was... what they had... it used to be distributed with Adabas, I think it was.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and as far as I can tell, base bears no resemblance to that, so I'm guessing they went back and wrote a new one.
I'm giving you my best audio-only blank stare.
It's very good. It's most effective.
I read a bunch about this project called Glow, which was also part of the OpenOffice umbrella, which is supposed to be what you're talking about, a calendar program. So I think that's in the works, but I don't know anything else about it.
Cool.
Okay, well, that pretty much rounds out the developer.com product of the year, other than a shameless piece of self-promotion, which I wrote the Java one, the Java article. So
nice.
Yeah. It's
Dick gets around.
I'm
a whore.
Just to explain that more, I mean, each of the categories has a full couple-page write-ups, right, that describes all the runner-ups, you know, what they are, and then, of course, then they describe the winner. So you sort of can get more information, more than just these lists.
Yeah. Yeah, and a bit of information as to why they might have won as well.
Sort of best of breed of the different categories.
Yeah.
That's excellent. I'm glad to see Creator winning again. I'm no longer at Sun, but I'm still very proud of that product. So cheers to everybody here that worked on or has worked with Creator. Cheers all around.
All right.
Reach over the table.
All right.
So what else do you have?
Well, I got one more that we can talk about. Like I said, poor preparation this week, just too much to do. But the other one that stuck out was an O'Reilly on Java.com article about native code no longer any faster than Java. Now, I don't think this will come as much as of a surprise to us and maybe the people listening to the podcast, but this is basically an incident. Let's see. Tony Coates relates an incident in which he found a Java-based implementation to be at least 10 times faster than a native code implementation. He concludes that native code solutions can no longer claim an automatic performance advantage. So, I mean, we've talked about this at length before, but, you know, you can go back and forth on it. Obviously, developer coding style has a lot to do with it, and... general developer competence. But at the same time, there are certain things that the Hotspot compiler can do, the just-in-time compiler can do, that an ordinary compiler couldn't. And that's just because Hotspot has this extra input of knowing what's executing and what's executing a lot. So it can go in and it can find those particular bottlenecks and pull a bunch of optimization stuff that you would never want to do in a real
I think more importantly, compilation environment. Couldn't do, right? So we talked about some of the Mustang optimizations where an API has to be synchronized because it might be called for multiple threads. But Hotspot knows that it cannot be because, for example, this object is only used in a particular stack frame, and so it's not possible for any other thread to access it. At that point, it can remove the synchronization from the library, and you could never do that in C++. So it's actually a theoretical advantage that is impossible to match in native code.
Right, and it's shortcutting virtual method calls when it knows that there's only one direct call, one implementation in a particular case.
Yeah, right. But I don't even know if you have to go that far. There's a lot of techniques that you can apply with optimization flags and stuff like that to inline and flatten loops and stuff like that. But if you did that to your program, to the whole thing, it would end up being enormous because everything would be flattened out. So, it's got that advantage of kind of mixing in the profiler and getting that advantage there. So,
I can't count. Well, I'm sure I could count if I had kept track, but it seems like too many times at different talks and things, people would ask me that question of, why is Java so much slower than C or C++? And I always look at them and go, it's not. Are you aware of Hotspot? And so frequently, people don't know about Hotspot.
Right.
It seems odd. If you're deep into Java, or if you've worked on the platform, you know everything about Hotspot, or at least you know about it. But a lot of the general public that even uses Java doesn't know anything about it and doesn't know it exists and doesn't know what it does. I highly recommend, if you have heard the term Hotspot but you don't know about it, go on to java.sun.com and go read about it. And it's actually kind of freaky the amount of stuff it does.
Yeah, it's cool.
And there's been some significant improvements in the last couple of releases. So Tiger is so much better than 1.4 and going to Java 5. And even Bustang coming up has got even more improvements.
Yeah.
Especially,
yeah.
I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
The client side.
Yeah, the client, the poor old client VM that the stepchild that gets ignored most of the time. So
that depends on who you are, of course.
Yeah,
it may be useful in the podcast. Here's a gem of actual wisdom of how to make a Java app that's faster. In general, Hotspot does an extremely good job when the entire Java programming is operating on the Java side of the fence. So it's an entirely Java heap. All of your loops and processing and all the memory you're messing with is all on the Java side. The minute you're making a call into native code, not just through JNI, but like doing file IO or direct accessing of graphics, things like that, places where it has to effectively thunk from the all virtual world of Java through to the native operating system, those are the places where you can't directly inline stuff like that. You still have to thunk through. So for applications that have tons of I/O, of course Carl's going to fix this, applications that do lots of intensive graphics things, not utilizing the higher level libraries like Java 2D, etc., those will tend to have more trouble effectively. But if it's a server side extreme processing thing, it's going to be much, much faster in Java.
Yeah.
Useful data.
Yeah. So, do we want to delve into any of the stuff that I've seen in the last couple of days that might be of interest to you guys? And I do have to watch what I say here. So there's a couple of things that have really come out of this. One of them is that, and again, I'm pretty sure I'm safe in saying a lot of this stuff. Sun is aware, surprisingly aware, of an IDE that we've covered actually in some detail in the past, which really took me by surprise, BlueJay. They're talking about BlueJay a lot right now, and that's a really cool thing for me to hear, because BlueJay is it emphasizes the simple user experience, it emphasizes the approachability of Java, and it's kind of cool to see them really talk about that. Have you
So refresh me, BlueJay is the kids Java, is that
not really kids? It's developed, or it's completely intended as a learning environment. It's an IDE that's intended to teach you Java, and it goes from the most basic idea that in its most basic form, you don't even have to create a class with a main method in it.
Okay. I didn't do it justice saying kids, but this is the,
right.
We're talking about
educational,
the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Educational version.
Absolutely is, and
kids is not the right term.
We got an interview with a guy way back, one of the first interviews we did. Talking about this, and what was also interesting is it appears that Microsoft has borrowed a lot of the ideas, borrowed being the key word, for the latest version of Visual Studio, and there's some information on the site that kind of lines the two up next to each other, and you can pretty clearly see that there's some influence taking place there, which, you know, the BlueJay kind of grew up in an academic world, and so there's not a problem with that sharing. The problem is with the attribution, or rather the lack of it, that no one has ever said, you know, thanks to BlueJay for doing this. But it is interesting. That was really good to see that, they're switched on to this this level of simplicity and this level of approachability for Java, which is key to the adoption of it.
Question about that. So BlueJay is obviously targeted at educational. If you were to sit down and install BlueJay, would you be able to build a production type of application, or is it really just the goal is to teach you the basic concepts of languages, etc.?
Right. It's the latter. When we talked to David Barnes, who was the interview that we did, he said there's nothing that stops you writing any actual Java in there, but at a certain point, he says most students realize that this is a learning environment and want to move on to something else. At a certain point, a little bit further along, they start to get pushed to learn something else.
I mean, it's not going to have support for, you know, built-in unit testing and maybe running some JSPs and all that stuff.
Right. Okay. Cool. But what it does really do, it has a lot of capability for something that is a learning tool. It's got, some basic UML support, so you actually can integrate the whole thing with UML diagrams and class diagrams. It's got a code pad, which, depending on who you talk to, is either a really cool feature or, that's all right. But it basically lets you execute code in a kind of a real-time environment, so you don't have to compile it up, and you can just run it and see.
Sort of a small talk, like interactive coding, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's a nice thing. It's got a lot of cool stuff in it, and like I said, I think I found that single fact to be the fact that Sun has seen this and knows what it is to be something that I consider very positive about the whole thing. So it seems
like it would be a useful thing to take that kind of pure educational approach, making all the concepts really simple, and building a tool that is that easy but can go all the way through to production quality.
Well, or even take this kind of tool as a front end and make it an extension to an IDE. Yeah. You know, NetBeans,
right.
Eclipse.
If you think of Creator, it's sort of it's built on NetBeans, but it's sort of optimizing for a particular kind of user, exposing a particular user model. This seems like another customization of the IDE that focuses on educational use. And what I thought was interesting about it is that it tries to teach you the distinction between a class and an object. And it has this visualization of that. So you can see, okay, I'm instantiating this class to make objects. And that kind of visualization tool is sort of an addition to a debugger that I think is very useful for people who are new to object-oriented programming.
Right. It's almost like training wheels. You know, as you go, you can raise them up and take them off, and the bicycle underneath is still the same bike.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to have that in a regular full-featured IDE.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the other one that really sticks out, I mean, I've seen such a lot of stuff that it's a jumble in my mind at this point, but the other one, and this is where I do have to be careful what I say, but I do know that a lot of this stuff is already out there, is I got to talk with a guy called Guy Steele, who is a guy who, he has such a brain on him that the presence is noticeable when he walks into the room. It's no other way to describe it. This guy is...
Did you say something like space-time warp?
Yeah. It was like space curved when he walked into the room because of the singularity of his intellect.
Well, I think our listeners should know that Guy Steele also is one of the authors of the Java language specification, right? So he's sort of
a language guru.
Right.
Guy, if you're listening to this, just ignore what you heard and continue being smart, because you don't have to let that go to your head.
Yeah. I'm looking around the room for my new copy of New Hacker's Dictionary, but it's probably in a box.
But anyway, his latest project is a language called Fortress, which is something that we're interested in. Now, doing this language justice after what I've seen is going to be hard, because the moment you mention Fortran in any kind of description, it's the kiss of death. But then Fortran is a tremendously enduring language, been around for so long. My dad learned to program in Fortran. That was one of the two languages he learned when he was at college. So when I went into this meeting to find out about this, my impression was that, and it was a wrong impression, and it sold it short, was that Fortress was Fortran that ran on top of the JVM. and had a few things in it like garbage collection and array bounds checking and some stuff like that. And I believe that that's a conception that a lot of the marketplace has on it right now. Actually, it turns out that this is quite a bit more than that. It's really, I'm watching what I say here, but there is some stuff that's been that's been published. So I'm safe talking about this. One of the things that is truly amazing is it's clearly intended for mathematicians, this language, for a start, which is a different focus from Java. It's not intended to be any kind of a Java replacement or any kind of competitor. It's definitely a complement to it, and it's intended for mathematicians. And it does something that Fortran and, in fact, no other language I've seen does, which is that it incorporates Unicode characters. And as a result, these Unicode characters literally let you write mathematical equations that execute. And to see this stuff, there is a white paper out there, and we'll have to dig that out. I'll make sure I send you the link. It can work in a purely ASCII mode, and it can also execute this stuff that looks like maths that comes straight out of a textbook.
There's no OCR on that.
Yeah, it is absolutely phenomenal stuff.
Well, we've been talking a lot about these other languages that are being touted as, you know, the be-all, end-all of languages, you know, Ruby and Python and all that, but Fortress is just this really fantastic language, probably not suited for web development.
Right.
You know, but which is extremely powerful and interesting. And the language specification is actually available.
Yeah. It's a fair way from being ready. They were very, Guy was very specific about that. But it is really, truly fascinating. Now, the other thing that was funny about this was...
Just one more thing. Can it actually execute on a VM? Can it compile to bytecode, or is that not at all?
You know, I'm not sure how much I can say about that right now.
Looking at the spec, which is available publicly.
Yeah.
If you just Google for Fortress language, you can find the spec and take a look at it.
Throw the term bytecode in there and see what that comes up with.
It appears to be just another grammar that compiles to bytecode. I mean, it looks like it's strongly typed and...
Right.
Mostly oriented towards numerical types.
Right.
It's object-oriented and has some interesting things.
I'm afraid of saying too much because it was a real privilege to get to talk to him and to see this stuff. But I would definitely recommend you go and check out the uh-oh. All right.
All righty.
Cool. So,
listener mail? Or
yeah, let's dive into some listener mail. Do you have some?
I've got a random tidbit that I stuck in the back of my head while we were talking about the new Macs. New interesting thing that came out a couple days after the big announcements is that anybody that got one of the pre-release PCs, the ones that a whole bunch of people had, I think you could spend... Anybody know? You could spend a little bit of money.
It was $1,000.
Yeah, you didn't actually get to keep it, did you?
It was a
rental/lease thing that you had to return, but they announced on, I believe, Wednesday that if you return those, you get a free iMac Core Duo 17-inch that you get to keep.
Nice.
I almost did that.
Yeah.
Just
so if
to
you lease one of
it.
Those, you get a free iMac. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Can you get one of the old ones now and then trade it in for the new one?
I think there's some.
You know, they're probably up for sale on eBay right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, listen to mail.
Okay, so here's one from Yale Cowell, and he says, "Fellows, I just stumbled onto your show last week and have been listening to them incessantly. Terrific stuff you're doing. Anyway, one thing I've always wondered about, and is probably something you guys could shed some light on, is how does Sun make money off of Java? It seems like a huge monetary investment for them, and it must generate revenue somehow."
That's a fun one. I'd love to jump straight at that.
Okay, then jump.
As people understand, there's no direct, by Sun anyway, there's no direct monetization of Java, and that's sort of a publicly known, a lot of people have commented on that. This is the sort of thing that people at Sun hear about a lot. But the point isn't necessarily to make money directly on Java, it's to make money off of everything else around that. You know, if you raise the water in the harbor, all the boats rise, is the theory that's been said many times. Sun sells hardware. They sell hardware that happens to run Java very, very well.
And happens to run .NET really, really poorly.
Yes, exactly. That's a very important point. So the more Java is ubiquitous and the more it runs, Sun benefits by people being able to choose a Sun-based production system. So, I mean, it's a pretty obvious equation if you're sitting at Sun. But to the outside world, that really is just looking at Java, the technology itself, and maybe not so aware of the fact that Sun is really a hardware company. It seems odd.
Right. I just realized I should probably just do a retraction right now. As of our agreement with Microsoft, I think all our hardware actually is certified to run Windows. I think it'd be sort of I think it'd be sort of a shame to run Windows on a Galaxy server, but you know, you could run .NET software.
Yeah,
but certainly it is in Sun's best interest if Java succeeds, so that our servers have a chance to run, you know, the app server and all that on our hardware, and we can make a sale. And in fact, this sort of just happened. My brother told me that he wrote this little application in Creator 2 to do some patch management. And so now his company is just buying a server to put on the web so they can actually have a little patch application for their customers. And I think that's the kind of thing that this enables for us. It also gets us talking to a bunch of customers that previously wouldn't have been customers. So this has come up not just in Java, but we're giving away all our tools for free. Why would we do that? How can we fund Creator and still make money? And the thing is, even though we're not making money on the tool, it actually does get us into, you know, accounts with all kinds of people who wouldn't have tried our stuff otherwise. That would have chosen, I don't know, PHP maybe, and VI.
I think it was actually Jonathan Swartz that coined that, the phrase, if you raise the water in the harbor, all the boats rise.
We interviewed him on this podcast.
Did you say that
3 months ago? But no, but he had quite a bit to say about the free.
Right.
So you know, this listener probably would, you know, find it interesting to listen to that podcast as well, the Jonathan interview.
Agreed.
So I'm not sure what else to say about
this.
You
guys have other opinions on how Sun's making money off of Java?
No, I don't. I was going to say I believe it's part of an alien invasion plot, but that's probably inappropriate, so I'll skip that.
There's a secret virus, biological virus inside of Java that essentially we're all going to be taken over soon.
The pod people.
That's right.
Let me just...
Soylent Green is people, by the way. I don't know if you guys knew that.
The podcast people are out to get us.
Let me just adjust my tinfoil hat and I'll continue.
Yes.
So have you got any more feedback for us, Dol?
Let's see. Well, we have a person here who's saying that I regularly listen to your podcasts. Yes, you also have a listener in the Netherlands, and I wanted to vote for you. However, they require an email address. I did not want to give that away, so I'm going to support you by sending you this email. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, well, you got his email address. Log in
do.
And register another vote.
I can understand. Seriously, I don't like having to give my email address when I vote, because I just know that a lot of these sites are going to be abusing my email address.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think the site's trying to keep people from cheating and voting a lot. So, you know, it's sort of a tough position for them.
Yeah, if it's a big site that I trust, then I might do it.
It's the same thing as going to a conference and they always ask to scan your badge. And you go around, you're trying to get a t-shirt or a flashlight or a yo-yo or something. And they're like, well, let me scan your badge.
And that's why I always borrow Tor's badge.
Exactly. We had all of our Macworld badges and I got one with my name on it. And, you know, people want to go on Wednesday and other people want to go on Thursday and they want to borrow your badge. And it's like, great, but do not scan this badge. It has my actual email address on it. As far as I know, nobody scanned it, but we'll see. I'm the same. What is this guy's name?
Yeah, we're not gonna give his name. He's just obviously interested in his privacy.
You can say his first name.
Yeah, it's Stefan.
Stefan, I'm with you.
He says,
"Don't give your email address away."
I think you should not try to pronounce Javapolis in the Dutch or Belgian way. Otherwise, we will never learn to pronounce English words correctly.
Pronounce it in the Carl way.
I'm not sure
way.
You should try to learn pronunciation from this show.
Is it Javapolis or Javapolis?
It's supposed to be Javapolis, but of course, everyone here says Javapolis.
Yeah.
So, Javapolis.
My dad used to say, "You still poking in Java?" That's what I'm doing, Dad. I'm still poking in Java. He's high tech.
Yes, indeed.
So we're actually getting quite a bit of nice feedback. I guess that one episode, I mean, we used to get so much bad feedback.
Yeah.
And but not from many people, but still, it's just sort of that's all we heard. And after we mentioned that, well, it was nice to get one nice email for
guys,
a change.
You guys didn't mention that to me.
we didn't talk about the death threats.
Tons of horrible, horrible emails.
It's a perk of the job.
Nice. Yeah, no, so it's gotten really, really nice. And so, you know, we appreciate that. I guess this is a self-promotion thing. But there are a few things with some content in the emails. Someone responded to our question about the Javapolis rad race.
Javapolis.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess we should take his feedback. Javapolis. And explained how it works. And it looks like it's a pretty comprehensive assignment. It says 19 pages. So
that's bigger than the specs I usually get.
Yeah. So this sounds pretty comprehensive. And yeah.
Cool.
I think you have to be pretty committed to going to doing something.
So we can post the links to that if people are interested in looking at that. We'll put them in the podcast notes.
Okay, so that's I'm sort of summarizing a long email.
Yeah.
But the first thing he said is the main problem is that the organizers ask participants not to disclose too much information about the tasks, probably because you're going to use them in the future.
Ah, okay.
So this is why they're being tight-lipped.
Right.
Ah, okay. So we won't post them. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. We have lots. I'm not sure if we're going to keep going through these things, or just keep doing some more.
Well, I did want to pick out my favorite one here.
All right.
It's from Jim DeVos, and it's called On the Naming of Raptor. And I had to laugh when I read this. Hi, guys. I'm relearning Java after a 5-year hiatus, and your podcast has been a valuable source of tips and tricks, as well as providing a good state of the union with respect to the Java community. Thanks. About the naming of Oracle's new database tool. Quest Software sells a popular database tool called Toad. Jurassic Park fans will recall that Velociraptors, aka Raptors, were reconstructed using the DNA of a toad. Just a coincidence or a subtle jab by the Oracle developers? Cheers, Jim D. So
that's cute.
Yeah, it is. There's obviously, all developers, far too much time on their hands.
Clearly a conspiracy.
Jurassic Park.
Clearly.
Hey, this is a Unix system. I know this. Yeah. The best computer scene out of any movie in the history of time.
Yeah. And it's been repeated. I've seen a couple more that just, you know. Yeah.
Toad. Nice find.
So, is it a wrap?
I think it's a
wrap. Feeling like a wrap. You guys, it's a great honor. And a big thank you to you guys for inviting me to join. And hopefully we can continue this.
Yeah, you do know that there's like a 3-week trial period, right?
Yeah, I'm on 3-week probation. I'll try to keep the cussing down.
Isn't that what happened with, you know, Siskel and Ebert, where for, you know, after Siskel died, Ebert, you know, was doing the, you know, the trying out the different reviewers and look for chemistry. This is what we're doing. We're trying the chemistry out here.
Well, hopefully in the 8 and 2.5 and 1 year that I've known you guys, maybe we have some of that already. We'll see.
Yes, no, I'm confident. It's going to be great.
I think the application of chemistry has certainly helped me this evening. Yes. I've had a great many chemicals this evening.
It's been a drinking night.
Yeah, so it's great that we could do this despite, you know, lack of preparation. So
seemed to work fine.
I'll probably have a lot of editing ahead of me.
Yeah, good luck, Carl.
Editing, and, you know, maybe we'll start getting some of that hate mail again. You know, please prepare before you sit down and waste our time, that kind of thing.
Well, a lot of the podcasts I've listened to, they do something special for the 25th. It's kind of like a coming of age, like we've got to 25 and, you know, we're still doing it. Whatever reasons we would have had not to to have stopped by now, they haven't taken hold. So, yeah, I guess this is a special and we'll get back to the regular.
Here's the 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
25 and one, I guess one for me.
And here's to being here
actually,
in person,
you know, the 25th
as well.
Year is when you add a new franchise team. You know, that kind of works. And any major sport tour.
What's
I'll
it?
Ask you about major sports. Right.
All right, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Cool.
Thank you for tuning in. See you next week.
Have a beautiful day. Drive safely. Tip your waitress on the way out.
That's right. We'll be here all week.